Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Cash That. This is your host, Joe Dallara. I am coming to you on Wednesday morning. So we have watched, I've rested. We watched those first couple Western Conference playing games. We are aware of a majority of the Western Conference matchups at this point in time. The Lakers obviously took care of business against the Pelicans. Zion gets hurt. The Kings beat the Warriors. The Warriors dynasty, is it over? Did LeBron outlast the Warriors dynasty? I think that is the real question that people need to be asking themselves, which is kind of crazy. And we have another matchup coming up. We have obviously the Pelicans against the Sacramento Kings. Zion Williamson hurt. We're going to dive into some of the implications of that. Tonight, we have some play-in tournament games in the Eastern Conference. We have the Philadelphia 76ers against the Miami Heat, and we have the Atlanta Hawks against the Chicago Bulls. I want to roadmap what we're doing in this podcast, but before that, this podcast is brought to you by our good friends at Props.cash. Props.cash is the number one player props betting tool in the market. One of the best and my favorite features about Props.cash is that you can actually filter out regular season versus playoff stats, which I think is super, super important when you're betting on the playoffs. The rotations change. You can see how the minutes change in by quarter to quarter. You can see how there's spikes in terms of their usage or in terms of the way that they play. Is there a decrease in their assists? Do they take a little bit more scoring load? Those are all things that you can get in props.cash, and you can still get it with those red and green charts as well, obviously, to see what the hit rate is, to see how that might have changed or how it's a little bit different for the playoffs and the postseason versus the regular season. And you can get that for 25% off with my promo code DALERA25, 25% off with code DALERA25. And that also gets you, obviously, Major League Baseball, hockey, etc., all the sports. So really good deal, really good people. Props.cash is where it's at. Now, I want to roadmap this podcast a little bit because we do have a lot to cover. There are some things that I will save for written just because I think it's a little bit easier to explain the math, right? But what I want to do today, quick hitters on the remaining play-in tournament games. I will start with the Eastern Conference since that's tonight, so that way it's first in your feed. Then we'll talk about the Western Conference a little bit. Then we'll try to talk about each series to a degree with a little bit of prop bets or a little bit of angles or things that I'm looking to see. That way you guys are prepared. It's just so much better now. We actually have the matchups. We can be a little bit more prepared about what's going on. When we've been talking about the playoffs before, we've just been kind of talking out of our ass. We didn't know what matchups were going to be there. We didn't know who was playing who. So just so many more factors here. And I'm really, really excited for the NBA playoffs. Now, the first game that I want to talk about is the Philadelphia 76ers against the Miami Heat. The Sixers have obviously gotten Joel Embiid back, which is a dramatic change in circumstance compared to where they were previously this season, when Joel just missed a bulk of the time. He kind of took himself, not through fault of his own, but he wound up being out of the MVP conversation, where it was a spot where we thought he was going to win. He was excellent this season. And, you know, he was leading the league in scoring. He was scoring over a point per minute. Really, really impactful player, obviously. One of the spots here when we're looking at this game opened at Philadelphia minus four. If you follow me in the Action app, you would have grabbed that minus four as well. This game is now up to 4.5. Philadelphia has gotten the majority of the money. At this point in time, they're getting the majority of the bets. This line has moved to minus 5.5. Wouldn't be overly surprised if we start seeing a minus six. I don't know if I would play it there. I do think that Philadelphia is significantly better than Miami over the course of the entire season, though. And that's even without Embiid for that big chunk of time. When we look at the advanced metrics, right, if we look at dunks and threes, Philadelphia is 10th in adjusted net, plus 2.4 net rating. They were 14th in adjusted offense, 11th in adjusted defense. And that was with missing Joel Embiid for such a huge chunk of time. Miami obviously has dealt with their own injuries, but they were 18th, plus 1.1, 21st in offense, 5th in defense. So the defense has been pretty obviously successful for them over the course of the season. One of the spots that Embiid has struggled in is against Bam Adebayo in these head-to-head matchups. And over the course of the last couple seasons, he has really struggled not only to score, but also as a rebounder and even as an assister. So we've seen some spikes in rebounding. However, he's only scored in – he's played 13 career games against Bam Adebayo. In those 13 career games, he has exceeded 30 points twice. The last time being in 2019. He's come close. He's had a 29 back. He had 29 back on April 4th of 2024. He had 27 back on February 27th of 2023. But what Miami has basically done is they've really, really sold out to stop Joel Embiid. So I think that when you look at his points prop today, his points prop is at 30.5. So it's a little bit lower than you would normally expect for Joel based on how good he's been this season and some of the numbers that he's really been able to put up. But I do lean a little bit of the under there. I think that the PA might be a touch better at 35.5. And even honestly, his PRA isn't bad. My concern with betting on any type of Joel under is obviously the dude has just been dynamic. He's been incredible. So, you know, even though we have this type of history against Bam Adebayo, it's always concerning and it generally goes against my cap for Philadelphia in this spot. Part of why I like Philly, though, is Tyrese Maxey's been incredible since Joel Embiid returned. I really just think that this Philadelphia team is significantly better than Miami. I get that we've been giving Spo, and like we continue to give Spo a lot of credit based on, you know, his pedigree, what he's been able to do as a coach, what he's been able to do long term in these types of matchups, right? But I do have general concerns about this Miami team who has really kind of struggled to get it together over the course of the entire season. So to me, I think that Philadelphia 100% is coming out of this play-in tournament one way or the other. Even if they lose to Miami, they are going to beat either Chicago or Atlanta. I have no real concerns about that. The biggest question is really going to be who is going to get the honor to get massacred by the Boston Celtics, because I don't think that any of these teams really have a great chance against Boston. Philadelphia would have the best chance of the three, or of the four, rather. And I'll kind of dive into that in a minute. As for Miami, I think that Miami should, in theory, get out of the play-in. We bet before the season started, we bet on them to miss the playoffs. We got some crazy numbers. We got like a 6-1. There was an 8-1 out there. If you want to hedge that now, I think that you can. I think that I would wait until after this game. I don't think that it's really worth a bet right at this juncture. I think that you'd basically just be hedging out of your position entirely. I do think that Philadelphia, like I said, I think that Philadelphia should win. Looking at the next game, though, when we're looking at the Heat versus the, or not, I'm sorry, when we're looking at the Hawks versus the Bulls, I think that this matchup is particularly interesting. Chicago gives up a ton of catch and shoot shots, which is something that Atlanta, you know, does kind of lean on. With Trae Young, obviously, incredible assister. DeJounte Murray really stepped up in Trae Young's absence as well. So I do think that there is a little bit of, you know, opportunity there for Atlanta. The problem with Atlanta is that they're missing a number of, like, really key players. They're missing Onyeka Okongwu. They're missing Jalen Johnson. They're missing Sadiq Bey. When you're missing those players, especially, I would say that in this particular matchup, the most important one I think to be missing is Jalen Johnson. I love Okongwu, but I do think that Jalen Johnson has been tremendous over the course of the entire season. It affects your defensive versatility to a degree. It affects your offense. Okongwu gives you a little bit of flexibility instead of Capella. But I think in this particular matchup, it's not as important. Capella's been nails versus Vucevic over the course of his career. And I like his PRA to go over 26.5. It's a number that he's cleared at an incredibly high clip against Capella, or I'm sorry, against Vucevic over the course of his career. And looking back over the last couple of seasons, he's hit this at a 78% clip. He's averaging 28 PRA. One of the misses at 26. He does have a couple makes at 27, so the margins are a touch thinner. However, I don't mind adding the... Normally, like, I wouldn't like to add assists, right, for this type of bet. However, I think that in this particular matchup, it works out pretty well. Capella has been diming like a little bit against Vucevic. So I do think that, you know, the floor is there for at least one. And given the fact that PR is 25.5, PRA is 26.5, I don't mind adding a little bit of floor when there's some upside for like 2, 3, or even 3 assist games, especially without these other two, especially without Okongwu, especially without Jalen Johnson. I think that that's incredibly important. It gives us a little bit more flexibility, right? And I think it gives us a pretty good opportunity here. The other thing is too, they might be playing, maybe they play a little bit of Bruno Fernando. Bruno Fernando has been great for them of late. I do have some concerns though, just given the fact that he's not the biggest dude. It would be a pivot for Vooch. You know, if you're trying to say like, well, we want to try to play a little bit smaller, we want to try to stretch him out a little bit, but he's not, Bruno Fernando is not exactly like a 3-point shooter either. So you're not getting that real advantage. He has played like minutes in the 20s of late. You know, he scored over 10 points in 3 of his last 4 games, really 3 of his last 5, let's call it that. He's had a pretty solid rebounding floor. I think that maybe it works and you can do it a little bit given the fact that Drummond is missing some time right now with injury. So, you know, Atlanta can kind of go a little bit smaller if they really chose to do that. I think that the real play though is on Capella in this game. Additionally, I do like Garrison Matthews. Our good friend Steve Keach is on Garrison Matthews over 3.5 or 4.5 points or 1.5 threes. I like all of those angles here. Part of why I like those, and I'm sorry, I misspoke. Drummond, as of right now, at the time of this recording, Dosunmu, questionable. Drummond, questionable. Patrick Williams obviously will be out. LaVine obviously out. So we'll have to kind of see what their status is for Drummond and Dosunmu. But I think that Capella will be really needed regardless in this circumstance, whether Drummond is in or out, given the matchup that they have against Vucevic on the interior. I do like the Garrison Matthews look, though, given the fact that Atlanta allows such a high, or given the fact that Chicago allows such a high volume of catch and shoot opportunities, Matthews is just an excellent, excellent option. I do prefer the points over the threes. Just never know if he's going to get like a layup or something like that. And you're not really getting enough in terms of what the juice is or anything like that to not go with the 2 threes when 2 threes is 6 points anyway. And then you're getting lines here at 3.5, 4.5. So I like a little bit of the flexibility instead. You might be able to take like an alt if you want to take like 5.5 instead of the 2 threes. I think that that probably makes a little bit more sense if the number, you know, if the numbers kind of shift as we get closer to tip. So I do like Garrison Matthews to go over his point total as well. Now, as for the game itself, I lean Chicago. I think that Chicago has been sneaky, like kind of good lately. Like you saw them push the Knicks. You saw them, you know, they really are grinders. I just think that Atlanta right now, given the fact that their defense is so poor, not having Okongwu, not having Jalen Johnson really impacts their defense. And then you add back in Trae Young, who is not a good defender. Chicago's offense has not been particularly good, but they have been able to hang. They are tough. They do have a lot of vets. And I just think that what they're going to be able to do today is really kind of push Atlanta. They have home court. And those are all things, those are all little advantages that do kind of matter. So I think that having some guys like, you know, DeRozan, they can kind of get into the paint and make an impact. I think that that's going to be critically important for Chicago in this game. And I do lean Chicago to kind of come out of this. Playing against either Miami or Philadelphia is not great. I think that they probably lose either. However, given where I am with Miami, I think the number is going to be long. I think that you're going to be able to take either Atlanta or Chicago at a plus money number and feel pretty comfortable with it. And at that point, if you wanted to hedge out, then it's fine. I think if they wind up playing Philadelphia, they're going to just get rolled one way or the other. I know that Atlanta, you know, they beat the Philadelphia 76ers a couple of years ago. A lot of talk about, you know, like how Joel played like the drop and whatever, but this Atlanta team just does not have that same level of juice. So I think that Atlanta's drawing dead. Additionally, whichever team does fall to the eight is going to be in just a world of trouble against this Boston Celtics team. So Boston is 3-1 against the Sixers, 3-0 against Miami, 3-0 against Chicago, 2-2 against Atlanta. They have just smoked everybody. Boston is so good this year. I think it's one of those years where we're looking at the bracket, right? And you look at a team like Boston, you're like, man, like, I feel like they lose these close games, because I do this all the time. Like, they lose these close games. Like, I feel like their crunch time offense isn't good. I feel like they have issues. But then you look at, like, the standings. They're number one in everything. They're number one in adjusted net. They're number one in adjusted offense. They're number two in adjusted defense. They play slow. So, like, they don't really – they're not really trying to necessarily get out in transition. They are – they're just grinding you to a halt on offense, and they're generally getting good shots through their process. The problem is, for me, and I've said this over and over, and we'll probably talk about it in a later episode, just because I think that Boston's path is going to be very good. If they're playing Miami, Chicago, or Atlanta, I am probably going to bet Boston to sweep the series. If they're playing Philadelphia, that's where I think it gets really interesting. I also think that if they're playing Philadelphia, it opens up the rest of the bracket a bit. Like, I think that then you can start betting on maybe you could bet on a Knicks. You could bet on a Pacers. You could bet on you could bet on the Bucks. You could bet on the Heat. You would bet on the Heat in that instance, because Miami would be in that part of the bracket. What I'm saying is that if Philly plays Boston in that first round, I think that is the best chance for anyone, and especially for Philly, to take down Boston. The biggest thing with this is that I've had this conversation on, like, to a different degree, but the way that I see this is that if you want a Philly ticket, right? So, like, I like Philadelphia. I think they're good. I think the number still has a little bit of juice there, maybe at 20-1. I know Brandon put out an article, Matt put out an article about backing them. I think we've mentioned it as well. But the thing about it is I think that if they lose to Miami, the number's going to get longer, and it shouldn't. The reason I'm saying this is that the number's going to get longer because they know that there's a confirmed first round matchup against Boston. On the flip side, if they weren't in that confirmed first round matchup with Boston, I would have like almost 100% certainty that Boston is going to make it to the conference finals. Boston's path would be one of Miami, Chicago, or Atlanta, who they are combined 8-2 against over the course of the season. Then they would be playing Cleveland, the winner of Cleveland, Orlando. Neither team can score. Neither team can score. They're dead on arrival, right? And that was, I think, some of the commentary that Donovan Mitchell was having, where he was like, I want to make a conference finals. I want to make an NBA finals. What Cleveland did was just such a loser mentality. And the funniest part about it is that they purposefully tanked that game to the Charlotte Hornets. Had they won, they would have been the 3 seed and not in that part of the bracket. They would have not played Philly. They would have played Indiana. They would have potentially been able to have Milwaukee, Boston, and the Philadelphia 76ers all in one part of the bracket, because Milwaukee would have been the 4, Boston would obviously be the 1, and then if the Sixers lost to Miami, the Sixers would be the 8. They would have been all in the other side of the bracket. Instead, they basically have a confirmed second round matchup against the Boston Celtics. Boston's going to win that series. But what I'm saying, though, is that Philly, you have to assume, because of what that path was, right? Philly was going to have to go play, if they win against Miami, they have to play the Knicks, which is just going to be a bloodbath. Then you got to go play the winner of Pacers Bucks, which is just going to be a high octane, like fully offensive series. I do like the Pacers there. We'll talk about that in a minute. Then after playing multiple series, you have to go play Boston, who probably has won some of these series by sweep. It probably hasn't played as many games. They're probably better conditioned. To me, if Philly drops to 8, is the time to buy Philly, specifically because Philadelphia will be the most healthy that they will have been. I get that they're going to have to play an extra game. They don't have the best rest scenario then, but it's still going to be better than the rest after having come off of like a 6-game series in New York, a 6-game series in Indiana or Milwaukee. Like, you're going to be like, that's the way that I see this. So if Philly drops to 8, I think the odds are going to swing, especially honestly, if the odds have to swing, if Philly loses this game to Miami and then is in the 8 seed playing game because of the math variability, right? Like, it's one game they could lose. That's the time to bet Philly to win the East, in my opinion, because they're going to have to, I think they should win the game against Chicago or Atlanta. Doesn't matter. But what they can do from a size perspective against Boston, I know that Boston's 3-1 against them, but I also don't think that like there's a better time for Philly to play them than this early in the playoffs. If they're able to play Boston in the first round, that is going to be the healthiest that Philly has been. The only concern is obviously D'Anthony Melton, but honestly, the way that these injuries have been for Melton, it doesn't really sound like he's going to be coming back and contributing meaningful minutes. So with that, you want to take the maximum health of Joel Embiid and put him out there when he's freshest against this Boston team. We obviously don't know. Like, maybe Embiid's injury is a little bit more serious. You know, he didn't play in the finale. It sounds like it was precautionary. And then this kind of all goes to waste. But at the same time, if Embiid looks good, even in a loss to Miami tonight, then that kind of swings the nexus. Then additionally, if Philly is out of the 7-8, or, you know, is out of the 7 spot in the bracket, so he's out of the 2-3-6-7, that really opens up a path for one of the other remaining teams to make it to a conference finals. And then, you know, you either have a hedge opportunity or, you know, you have a, depending on the markets, you can always get one of those maybe to be eliminated in the conference finals, that type of bet. So that takes me to the next series that I want. Let's start talking about the Eastern Conference playoffs. So we just got the, actually, let's see what the schedule is real quick. I want to talk about this in order. So the schedule is, the East starts on Saturday. Both start on Saturday. All right, so this is perfect. All right, so we're going to talk about the Eastern Conference playoffs first. And the series that I'm most fascinated by is the Pacers versus the Bucks. We just got news that Giannis Antetokounmpo may be missing some significant time due to injury here. And given that, it's swung these odds dramatically. If you follow me in the Action app, you would have been able to get Indiana Pacers plus 215 on the series. We knew Giannis was hurt. We didn't know the extent, but there was a chance. Okay, there were two things. Number one, there was a chance that he was just not going to play, or that like the injury was more severe or whatever. That number comes down. I also just like the Pacers in this spot. The Pacers are 4-1 against the Bucks this year. The Bucks just have not really been able to stop them at all. And it's been a great season for Indiana against Milwaukee. When we look at what the score is, right? You can bet the Pacers minus 2.5 games plus 300, Pacers minus 3.5 at plus 610. You can also bet a sweep either way, which I think is not what I would do. I think that Milwaukee's offense is just not going to be close to there. I think Giannis has been playing at an MVP type level. Would have a very difficult time seeing Milwaukee pull off multiple games without Giannis at this juncture. Given that, you know, obviously do some line shopping because these lines are kind of moving around just on a daily basis here. But what I do think is really important to consider and to kind of keep in mind when you're betting on this series is the longer and I'm going to give a hat tip to Brandon here. If you guys don't know, me, Brandon, and Jim talk literally every day. I talk to Watts too. So it's just one of those things where we're bouncing ideas back and forth against each other. And then a lot of that gets regurgitated in one way, shape, or form on whether it's here, whether it's buckets, where whatever. So with this particular matchup, with this spot, right, the longer the series goes, the worse it is for Indiana. And the point of that is that Giannis, it seems like it's like he's going to miss the first two games. He's going to miss multiple games, right? If Milwaukee is able to split those, for example, then like, yeah, Indiana took home court, but Milwaukee's getting their best player back. They're getting the best player in the series back. With that, it's like the longer the series is able to drag, you would presumably the healthier Giannis is going to be. And it would show that he is healthy. So the longer the series goes, the worse it is for Indiana. So like, I think that right now, like let's say you're like, Joe, I want to bet into the series now. Like, what do I do? What's the best bet? At this juncture, your best bet is either Pacers in four or Pacers in five. So you either want Pacers 4-0 or, you know, Pacers minus 2.5 games, minus 3.5 games, like whatever, however your book kind of lists it. That's what you want to do. Because, yeah, like Indiana could win the series in seven, but I think it's the most unlikely scenario given the fact that game seven would be a home game for Milwaukee it would be a home game for Milwaukee, a game seven environment for an Indiana team that has not really had to do any, like has not had to play any type of game with that type of stakes. Pascal Siakam obviously would have, but he's the only one really. So definitely a little bit of a concern if the series goes long. That's why your best bet on this series at this juncture would be for that. Now, one of the other things that I am fascinated by and I'm really curious to see, right, is we're getting these series leader markets, and guys have heard me talk about it. You've heard me write about it or read what I've written about it. And the series leader market is one of my favorite markets to bet on. And a large part of that is because of there's so much like nuance, right, in these playoff matchups, but also like players take on different roles. And the numbers are just wrong, right? So like in this series, for example, Halliburton should lead in assists like easily. Like I don't even, the number's going to be preposterous, right? The reason that these are interesting though is because a lot of these markets, the ones up right now, so Bet365 has it, FanDuel has it right now. The markets say about like raw totals and they're like, who is going to have the most points in a series, the most assists in a series, right? Other times we've seen DraftKings has been the one that really has done this, and it's been like highest points per game average in this series. It really dramatically changes the bet, right? So like in this series with Giannis, and then it also applies to the Clippers and the Mavericks series with Kawhi Leonard, and we'll talk about some of the nuances there, but you can kind of keep this framework for that as well. When we're looking at the Eastern Conference, right, and in this particular matchup between the Bucks and the Pacers, let's say Giannis comes back. Let's say Giannis misses one game. Honestly, let's say he misses two, right? And they open this market, because it hasn't been opened yet, for the most – I'm going to refresh the page right now, so that way – yeah, so it's we still don't have it. Let's say they open him. Let's say, you know, Dame scored 50 points. Halliburton scored 50 points. Let's say they open Giannis at, I don't know. Let me think about like something for comparison. Let's say they open him at like plus 800 or some stupid number, because like they have to, like he's behind the eight ball, especially if Indiana's up. Like let's say Indiana's up 2-0 and Damon Halliburton each have, and Siakam's got like 50. There's like multiple guys with 50. I think at that point, you have to bite on Giannis. You have to buy. And the reason I say that is he's the one way the way that he could win is basically like the series goes a little bit longer. Like maybe they can force like a game, at least a game five, if not a game six. The dude is averaging almost 50 points a game against the Pacers. So it's like he can make up that ground rapidly. And if Dame is the number one guy, it pulls Dame's usage down. So he's chasing, like, because Giannis is back, it's going to pull down what Dame does, especially against this Indiana team who does a really good job of limiting assists. And when you look at what Indiana's got, they've got Haliburton, they got Siakam. Siakam's going to have a much tougher time scoring with Giannis on the interior. And Haliburton, you know, maybe you can throw doubles at him now because you have a guy like Giannis on the floor. So that kind of changes the nexus there. So I think that like I'd be actively looking to be betting on Giannis points leader and rebounds leader as soon as he gets back. Like whether it's game one, whether it's game two, I don't know what the number's going to be, but you're going to be basically getting a discount because he's spotting the other guys a game. And that I think is the best way to look at it, because you're just like, all right, yeah, but like, could Giannis outscore these guys? Like, let's say the series goes five games. Could he outscore everybody in four? Could he outscore everybody in three? And that's really the bet that you're kind of making. And the bet gets more valuable the longer the series goes. So like if you bet, like, because he just has more opportunities to get there. If they open like a, if they open a points per game market, and this is the thing that I think is so interesting, right? Like you could bet on somebody to be the scoring leader that's not Giannis in this Pacers Bucks series. Maybe you get a really good number on a guy like Bobby Portis, for example, because if Giannis is really hurt, Bobby Portis kind of fills it up. Let's say you bet on Bobby Portis. I don't really think that Bobby Portis has a chance if Giannis comes back, but if he got like really hot, let's say Giannis came back game four, he comes in late, like something like that, maybe it's worth a dart. Let's pivot this. Let's say you bet on like a guy like Siakam, right? Siakam, he winds up actually leading in raw points per game, or for the series. He leads in raw points for the series. If they open a points per game market, maybe you're not convinced that Giannis could catch Siakam, but you know that he's going to have the highest points per game in the series. You could always bet both. And then you could use the raw total as like a ladder opportunity on Giannis, because you're like, well, this would be the higher amount of that. Like this is how we could do that. Alternatively, if they're down in the series, maybe you bet on Milwaukee, because Milwaukee winning would strongly correlate with Giannis being able to stretch the series out, being able to extend the series out. So there's a couple different ways for you to bet this. If it's not necessarily available to you directly through like this type of prop. One of the ugliest series on the board is the Cavs versus the Magic. This is the NBA TV series. This is the go to the gym during the day. This is the mow your lawn. This is the series that like not only, it's going to be a bloodbath, right? Like these scores are going to be, these scores are going to be like 75 to 80. They're going to be, it's going to be an ugly, ugly, ugly game, series. It's going to be ugly games. My thought on this series is I lean Orlando. I think that Orlando has been a more cohesive unit. I think that Cleveland has been excellent at times. Like Cleveland's ceiling is higher, right? The concern for me with Cleveland is I don't think, and I've said this, I feel like I'm shouting it from the rooftops, I don't think that the team is really well composed. Like when they've had Mitchell, Garland, Allen, and Mobley on the floor at the same time, they just haven't really been great. But when they've split them up, they look so good. And I know like some of the, you know, like the Cleveland people, like they're like, well, like the team is actually really good. They went on these runs with everybody. You know, like all these guys came back and they still went on runs. Dude, like when you tank a game to the Hornets because you're afraid to play the 76ers or you're afraid to play the Miami Heat, like whatever, that is just loser shit. It is just loser mentality. And that is echoing throughout that locker room. It's like, hey, like we don't think that you could beat Philadelphia in round one. We don't think that you could beat Miami in round one. Maybe that motivates them. To me, that is that has the opposite effect. You have like a team like the Knicks, they go out, obviously, you know, it probably didn't really benefit them to play Philly or Miami in round one when you could play Indiana. Not, I think Indiana is good, but I just think that, you know, Miami and Philly might be better. Philly, definitely. Miami, you know, the coaching is just there. You know, you just don't know what they're going to show up with in the playoffs, right? With this series, I think that Miami, like if this is a bloodbath, right? If it's a bloodbath between Cleveland and Orlando, I want dogs. Like I want Paolo. I want Wagner. I want Suggs. Like those are the dudes. I want Jonathan Isaac. Those are the dudes that I want. Isaac has seen his minutes uptick. He's been really like pretty awesome in the minutes. He's defensive, just maestro, just been absolutely incredible. And I think that for me, what Orlando can do on the defensive side of the ball is just absolute nails. So obviously the best scorer in this series, the best offensive player in the series is Donovan Mitchell. The Magic probably have like some of the best combination of players to throw at Mitchell, to throw at Garland. The format is out there because the Knicks did it to them last year. They have two relatively undersized guards in Mitchell and Garland. The Magic play big. They have these long wings. They like you can throw like Suggs is an absolutely incredible defender. Should be on to some defensive player of the year ballots. He should be first team all defense, if not second team. The dude is incredible, right? You're going to put Suggs on either Mitchell or Garland. You can throw Jonathan Isaac on them. There are just so many things that Orlando can do to slow down Cleveland. And when Cleveland's offense, like when, if those guys aren't having it, they got nobody else. And it's kind of similar to what Orlando has, but the difference to me is that Paolo's at least a bigger dude. And I know that, you know, the matchup between Mobley and Allen, probably not the best for Paolo, but Paolo's pretty big. Franz Wagner's pretty big. You have a little bit more size, so it's not as like you smothering if you throw a guy like Jonathan Isaac on them, for example, or like an Isaac Okoro or like something like that. I think that Paolo's impact and Franz Wagner's impact in this particular matchup is going to be a little bit more useful in like what I think is going to be like a rock fight. That being said, there are some series leader bets that I do like here. A couple of them, I'll hit you with them now. I like Donovan Mitchell to have the most total assists. He's plus 410 right now at FanDuel. I think that this number is just, I really just think the number is too long. If we look at Bet365, he's plus 275. He's the second favorite. I think that this is one of my favorite bets in the series. Mitchell is averaging not even a full assist less than Garland. Garland is consensus favorite on FanDuel, minus 165. The only player on the Orlando Magic that is averaging over five assists, over four assists, honestly, is Paolo. Paolo's averaging 5.1 on the season. I think that there's something to be said about the fact that Orlando does a really good job of limiting assists. However, given the uptick in minutes, given the fact that like Mitchell is a guy that you're just not taking off the floor, same with Garland. I do like the fact that there's a little bit of upside here, and given the numbers, like given what the averages are, I think that even if you discounted it a bit and you kind of gave Paolo maybe like a touch of a bump, just because I think that he's going to have to get that type of usage. I think the number is crazy for Donovan Mitchell at plus 410. The other player that I think, I think that's a full unit play. I really like the spot. I think that Mitchell needs to be the engine of the offense for them to beat the Magic. Now, the second play that I really like in this same series is a sprinkle. So like when I say sprinkle, take like 0.1, 0.15, something like that of a unit. I'm betting on Caris LeVert 34-1. To be the assist leader in this series. He's plus 600 at Bet365. LeVert is averaging over five assists a game. Garland and Mitchell are like touching six. Like they don't have that significant of a lead over him. I think in a series where Cleveland might really need offense. Like, I think that they should be playing LeVert a bit more than Strus. Like, I think they should be playing him more than Okoro. I think that they need to play him just so that they have a little bit of more of offensive versatility. They don't really have another guy. And I think that being able to throw another creator or like another guy that can get his own shot on the floor, I think is so important given what Orlando can do to you defensively, like throwing Suggs, throwing Isaac at Mitchell and Garland. Maybe LeVert gets an opportunity to kind of create a little bit for some of the big guys, whether it's Mobley, whether it's Allen, or maybe, you know, that he can help kind of create for Mitchell and Garland. So I think that the number is just way off at 34-1 for a guy that's averaging like essentially the same amount of assists as Paolo, who is like +350. I understand that it's, you know, different team, different scenarios, you know, different rotations, but the number just isn't right at 34-1. So I like Caris LeVert to be the series assist leader. Let's turn to the other set matchups. I want to talk about the Western Conference right now. And let's go talk about the Clippers and the Mavericks. The biggest question here is obviously what the health status of Kawhi Leonard is. Kawhi is critically important for this Clippers team. And it's been crazy because we've been talking about them all year. You're like, oh, they're going to be healthy. They're looking good, whatever. Like they've had some guys miss time, like what have you. And then this happens. Of course, right as the playoffs are about to start. The thing that I think is interesting, though, is Chris Broussard said that Kawhi has, quote unquote, a lot of swelling, close quote, in his knee. I think that means that you can't really include him for like raw total stat leader props. We've seen this where he's played a game, sat, tried to come back, like those types of things. I do think that it's notable that he was named as the 12th player on the U.S. Olympic team for this summer. I don't know if it's just like perfunctory, like they just wanted to name him to that team because the team is like anticipated to be so good, right? And they could always get an injury replacement later, but they wanted to kind of give him the nod, give him the honor. Or if it's that, maybe he's okay. Maybe he'll be fine. So I do think that that's interesting, right, for this series against the Mavericks. And that is obviously the biggest question mark here. These teams played each other three times this season. Clippers took two of the three. They haven't played each other since December 20th. These teams are just like not the same. It's just you could throw a lot of that out. The Clippers, obviously different this season. You have James Harden, Russell Westbrook's moved to the bench. And I think that one of the craziest stats, like when I was looking in this series, Kawhi and Paul George have played two games in the playoffs last season. Kawhi played two games last season. Aside from that, they haven't played playoff minutes since June of 2021. That's a long time ago. Like I was shocked because it seems like you look at the Clippers, you look at these guys, and you're like, oh, these guys play in the playoffs all the time. They're awesome. Like that's just what they do. They're built for the playoffs. And then you look and you're like, oh, you haven't played in the playoffs in a while. So it is a little bit of a different situation, but they both do see noticeable upticks in their minutes, average about 39 minutes per game, each of them. So we should expect to see that. Now, when Kawhi has not played this season, the Clippers have leaned a bit heavier on James Harden, Paul George, a little bit of Norman Powell, and a lot of Russell Westbrook, actually. Westbrook's been an innings eater, is the way I would like to call him. I think that he has been really impactful in terms of elevating the bench minutes, and it's weird because they're still losing. They're not good. They're not necessarily good minutes. Like he's still losing the minutes. However, you're not losing them as bad, and I think that matters, right? So he's playing these minutes against the bench. He's winning these minutes or like losing them, but not as bad, and that's super relevant. Come playoff time, I don't know what his real usage level is going to be in a series here, where if Kawhi doesn't play. Sure. If Kawhi does play, I really don't know what his usage is going to be. Now, this is what I thought was a fascinating line. In the event Kawhi doesn't play, right? Like, let's say he does. Like, let's say he doesn't play. I think that maybe I would want to stay away, to be honest with you. And it's specifically because, to me, if he's sitting out game one, maybe he comes back game two, maybe it changes some things. If Kawhi does play in game one, the number is going to swing, right? Maybe then Kawhi, you know, let's say Kawhi leaves game one, like he's hurt, the swelling, it swells up again. That's when I'd want to bet on Westbrook to lead the series in either assists or rebounds. Numbers are going to be preposterous. It's just a sprinkle. Like, it's nothing crazy. But I do think that he could really step up, just given the motor, given the minutes he would probably have to play because the Clippers are relatively thin. I think there could be a little bit of value there. If you want to play them early, assists is 36-1, rebounds is 66-1. So just a little bit of opportunity there. With all that being said, though, we have Luka Doncic in this series. Luka is quite literally capable of just dominating the series from front to back. He's a legitimate threat to lead in points, rebounds, assists, threes, probably turnovers. Like, he is a legitimate threat to lead in these categories. I think that given the Kawhi injury, the lines on these numbers, especially one, is just way off. Luka leads all players in this series in points at 33.9, rebounds 9.2, and assists 9.8, and threes 4.1. I think threes has a little bit more variability to it. Right now, Luka is minus 250 to lead in points at Bet365, minus 550 to lead in points on FanDuel. I honestly would lay the minus 250. That opened at minus 125 and probably one of the worst lines I've ever seen in my life. Bet the shit out of it. I was trying to save it for this pod, for this content. The line just moved instantly. It's been bouncing around a little bit. I genuinely still think that there's a bit of value there at minus 250. He has absolutely torched the Clippers. Luka against the Clippers has just been tremendous, right? Even in the regular season, he's been unbelievable. He's averaging 32.6 points per game in 18 career games against the Clippers in the regular season. If we start including playoff stats, it's been even more bonkers, right? Looking at his numbers in the playoffs, 31 games, he's averaging 33 points per game, 8.5 boards, 8.3 assists against the Clippers. I think this is a great opportunity to bet on Luka. The dude has been tremendous, right? And when we look over some of the more recent history in this matchup, let's see, last four seasons. When we look at some of the more recent history here, we can see that these numbers spike even more. He's averaging 35.4 points per game in 19 games in the regular season and the playoffs against the Clippers since 21-22. And looking at these totals, he's gone over 24 in all these games. He's had one game at 19, and that was on May 30th of 2021. So he's just been tremendous. He puts up these crazy numbers, these crazy games, and I think that from a raw scoring perspective, we should anticipate that he scores the most points in the series. Couple that with the fact that if Kawhi is not necessarily feeling 100%, maybe you can't throw Kawhi on him. Paul George is a little bit too small, I think. Harden is not a guy that you're going to throw on Luka. You really do need Kawhi, I think, in this series to try to slow down Luka because he's the only guy that can really play him one-on-one. You don't want to double him. It's untenable, I think, against a Dallas Mavericks team that has a lot of shooting now and has another guy like Kyrie Irving on the squad as well. Kyrie can score, obviously, like in bunches. I don't know if I really love him in this spot, given the fact that I think Harden's obviously slower than Kyrie, but I do think that it makes it a little bit harder to post him up. Harden's a pretty good post defender. I think Paul George is a pretty good defender still. Those guys can kind of take care of Kyrie, in my opinion. Kyrie is plus 550 on Bet365 to lead in scoring. However, on FanDuel, he's plus 1600. So if you were a little concerned that maybe they throw a lot of doubles at Luka, I think that maybe a little sprinkling Kyrie Irving at 16-1 would be your pivot. The one thing that I will say, though, is in these playoff spots, Luka has averaged fewer assists, right? And I think that that's actually going to open up that market, right? So Luka right now is the favorite to lead in assists. He's about, like, depending on the book, right? So FanDuel has him at, for most total assists, they have him at, let's see. No, I don't know. They got moved. So right now, let's pull it up on the phone instead. Sorry, you're bearing with me here. But anyway, James Harden is plus 200. This is the point of this. James Harden is at plus 200 to lead the series in assists. Luka's minus 270. Harden plus 180 at FanDuel is plus 200 at Bet365. That's my favorite bet of this series, is Harden to lead the series in assists. Harden has been very solid in the playoffs. And obviously, like I said, different team, different scenario, right? But what I think is going to be kind of necessary is that Harden is going to be needed as like a hub. He's going to be needed to be used as a facilitator. Over the last 4 years in the playoffs, obviously Harden has played a lot of these with Joel Embiid, a lot of great pick and roll there. However, in the last 4 years in the playoffs, Harden's played 32 games. Luka's played 22. Luka's averaging 7.6 assists per game. Harden is averaging 8.5 assists per game. If Kawhi doesn't play, it obviously impacts Harden from a perspective of like, well, he has one fewer finisher on some of these assists. However, it also probably means that the ball is in his hands more and there should be just an uptick in raw opportunity. So I think this is one of my favorite bets of the playoffs at this juncture, is Harden to lead the series in assists at plus 200. Love the spot, love the look, and I think it's a really good opportunity for him here, where I think Luka could wind up being like primarily used as a scoring threat, really as he should be, right? So I do like Harden to lead in assists. Looking at another series, we're looking at the Suns versus the Timberwolves. The Suns are 3-0 against the Timberwolves this season. There has not been a single player on the Timberwolves that has averaged more than 18 points a game against the Suns this season. When we look at this, Ant kind of talked about this. Ant was talking about how Phoenix is interesting because they throw a lot of doubles at him. And then Nurk is obviously in the paint, so it kind of gums up the paint. The spacing's not great with Cat and Gobert on the interior. And it's kind of been a little bit of an issue for them, right? Looking at what Minnesota has been able to do from a scoring perspective, Cat is averaging 17.5 points per game. Anthony Edwards is at 14.3. They are the leading scorers in this matchup against these Phoenix Suns. That is insane. That is not good. That is just like that is so problematic for so many reasons. I think they're really going to struggle to generate offense, which is always a concern, especially against a Phoenix team who has not only had your number, but they just have so much offense, right? Like you have Beal looks pretty good right now. He looks good. Booker always looks good. Durant always looks good, right? You can throw a couple different players at them, but maybe you throw McDaniels on Book, maybe a little bit of Nikhil Alexander Walker on Beal or vice versa. Maybe you throw then you have to throw what? Cat on Durant? Not really a tenable solution. So then maybe you have to double. Maybe you have to throw some other guys there. It makes it very, very difficult for Minnesota to generate enough defense to cover Phoenix. And because they have so many defenders that aren't necessarily strong offensive players, it really forces the load onto basically two guys, Towns, Ant, maybe a little bit of Naz Reid, especially the way he played to end the season. But in order to have Naz Reid on the floor, you have to play less Gobert. You have to play less Karl-Anthony Towns. That's the only way to keep him on the floor. I think they should. I think that they have to in this series. I think this is like one of the worst draws that Minnesota could have possibly had in the entire Western Conference. That being said, I think that this opens up a lot of opportunity for players on the Suns to lead in certain categories, stat categories. One of which is, I think that Devin Booker obviously sees an uptick in assists in the playoffs. He's been a really strong facilitator over the course of the entire season. I do think that it opens up a little bit of an opportunity for Bradley Beal. And the reason I say this is when we look at what, you know, Phoenix can kind of do, or what Minnesota can kind of do in terms of stopping Phoenix, is you could throw some of your best defenders on the perimeter. You can throw them at Beal, you can throw them at Booker. I just think the number's a little bit long for Beal to lead in total assists at 10-1 on, it's 10-1 on FanDuel, and it is 7-1 on Bet365. So 10-1. All right. Beal has been pretty solid over the course of the entire season. You don't really look at Booker as like a true facilitator. You wouldn't say like before where they had, like when they had Chris Paul, for example, you wouldn't say like, all right, well, he's an average more than Chris Paul or like that type of thing. They don't really have like a true number one facilitator. You would say it's Book, but in a given matchup, it could be anybody else. So I do like that. The other thing is, I think that Beal is a good bet to lead in threes made. He's 20-1 on FanDuel to lead the series in threes. I think he was only like 8-1 on Bet365. I think the number is a little long at 20-1, given the fact that he was 2-for-3 in one game, and I think it was 4-for-4 in the other game. Either way, he just smacked against the Timberwolves in this matchup. And what I think is also important about that is that if he's able to stress this Timberwolves defense, it forces them into a scenario where they can't really send doubles in the same way. Beal is actually leading the team in points per game in this matchup. He's at 25 points per game, and he's averaging 4 threes per game. He had that one kind of explosion type of game where he just dropped, I think it was, he dropped like 36 points against the Timberwolves. I just think it's a good opportunity for him. I think that if I'm Minnesota, I might try to game plan and say like, all right, well, like Bradley Beal, you beat us because you're the guy that has had the least, like, You have the most injury history. You've had the least reps, like the fewest reps with this team. Book always wants the ball in his hands. Durant doesn't necessarily care the same way. But I do think that maybe they say like, all right, well, Beal, you go beat us. Like, try to beat us. I don't like Grayson Allen. I think that specifically it's a bad series for Grayson Allen, given the fact that they don't really need his offense. And he's a relatively low volume guy. I think that, you know, maybe in this series you see a little bit more Royce O'Neal, maybe a little bit more Eric Gordon. I think that that's kind of the way that you would try to do this if you're Phoenix. I don't think that you just don't need his offense. You appreciate his spacing, but Beal can space the floor. O'Neal can kind of space the floor a little bit. Obviously not to the extent that Grayson can. I know Grayson just signed this crazy extension, but it's not even that crazy, but it's really just he had them bent over a barrel because they just due to cap reasons, they couldn't, if they didn't re-sign him, they weren't going to be able to use the money anyway. So I do think that what Phoenix is maybe going to be able to do is use a little bit more defense to potentially limit what Minnesota can do, you know, like a limited fashion offensively. Alternatively, if you don't and you decide like, all right, well, we're just going to put a ton of offensive players here because we don't think that you can score with us, then that should open up Beal a little bit more on one-on-one opportunities. So I like Beal for a lot of things in this series, to be honest with you. I think that Book should probably lead the series in scoring, but I think that Beal could definitely be the leader in threes. I just think it's a really good opportunity. I'm hoping we get some other lines here. I don't find a ton of value on the rebounding props here. You're looking at Gobert versus Nurk. It should really be heads up, and the line is kind of indicative of that. I don't love the matchup, honestly, for either player in this matchup. I think they both kind of neutralize the other. Looking at the Lakers versus the Nuggets, so we have this Western Conference Finals rematch, and it's been it last year was really it was really pretty interesting, right? So we had the closest sweep in NBA history, and when that series happened, everybody's like, oh, like the Lakers, you know, they shouldn't retool, they look great, and like they didn't. Denver didn't really do too much differently either. But now we have a situation where we have this rematch and we have a ton of information to go off of. We have a lot of games. We also have a lot of Nuggets victories. Nuggets have won 8 straight games against the Los Angeles Lakers. So in this matchup, we had a really interesting scenario last year. FanDuel actually had a couple lineups and a couple options that I thought were really advantageous that I really actually liked and I wanted to bet on. So one of those was they had parlays of basically points leader, rebounds leader, assists leader. In this particular matchup, I'd like Jamal Murray to score. Murray led the series last year in scoring. He had 130 points across the 4 games. When we look, the next closest was LeBron had 111. Jokic also had 111. AD had 105. So they still like solid games from everybody. Murray just was cooking, and they didn't really have a great answer for him. The Lakers have enough answers. I'm not going to say that they have an answer for Jokic because they don't. But at the same time, they did find some success in a couple of different things. One of which was, you know, they just tried it on Zion. It didn't really work out last night. It did work the game before. But I think that had to do with the fact that they played a little bit more Valanciunas, Kunis for our friends out there. But they did play a little bit more of Val in that play-in spot, and Zion just kind of went off. So they couldn't do exactly the same thing. What they are able to do, though, is because Aaron Gordon, not really a shooter, he's often in the dunker spot, that type of thing. He can space the floor, but you're not really concerned. The biggest thing for him is cutting, right? AD is able to play off ball a bit. You can use him as a roamer, and you'll usually throw a guy like Rui or LeBron on Jokic. If you're going to throw, like, the problem is, like, LeBron is just, he's obviously getting older. This is a very tough matchup for him. It's very brutal. It's just brutal series. Brutal. It's grueling, right? I think that that becomes very difficult for him. That being said, it opens up a lot of things for Murray. It opens up the pick and roll. I like Murray to lead in scoring. I don't know what the line is right now. There isn't one at the time that I'm recording this on Wednesday morning. We'll see what it is. So Murray wound up leading the series in scoring. In terms of rebounding, Anthony Davis had 56. Jokic had 58. So it was pretty close there. I think that that could be an interesting market. I want to see what the numbers kind of shake out as. And in terms of assists, Jokic had 47. LeBron had 40. And nobody else was really close. Austin Reeves was next closest with 21. Jamal Murray also had 21. So it's a two-man race for the assists as well. What I have noticed, though, generally, in this series, Jokic dimed a lot. And I think that's because of what the Lakers did schematically against him on the defensive side of the ball. generally, though, in the playoffs, Jokic is used a little bit more as a scorer. It just is kind of the way that it's kind of shaken out. One of the bets that I put in the other day was I like Jokic to go over his points per game total. It was 26.4. MGM's like offering these totals, and they're basically like just the season averages for these players. And it's kind of, I don't know, I think it's kind of dumb, right? And you're not really getting, you're getting a ton of value, just because you're not seeing these same rotations. You're seeing slightly different looks. And I think that it's like misguided that those lines are up there. So there's definitely some value there. I'm digging into a bunch of them. I really like the Jokic ones. They kind of took them down. Let's see if they put them back. They didn't put up the threes ones yet, but they had Jokic at 1.1 threes. That's definitely an over. The 29 points, I think, is a stay away. I think that's a little bit too high, especially given a first round match against the Lakers, where I think that he might not really get there. Maybe if they keep these open longer, there'll be a little bit more opportunity for him. I do think that Jamal Murray, his points per game average isn't crazy. It's 21.2. I think that could be a pretty good look for a guy that really has thrived in the playoffs. I do like that look. That being said, I think this series it's weird because like we joke about it, right? 4-0 series sweep. Right now, the line for the series is Denver -1.5 games, and it's like -140 or so, right? These games were not decided by like a ton of points. Game one, 6 points. Game two, 5 points. Game three, 11 points. Game four, 2 points. It's tough because I do think that the Lakers, it does feel like the Lakers are drawing a little bit dead. And I think that the line, is like kind of teetering between we have to respect LeBron, you know, the Lakers are public, and the fact that Denver should win the series. Denver is healthy. They are going to be rested. They lost Bruce Brown over the course of the season, but in, you know, free agency. But it's really the same Lakers squad that they swept last year. And when you watch the games, the Lakers always felt like they were in it, but they weren't like really in it. Like it's like when you watch a game, it's like, if you're not box score watching, you look at something and you're like, oh, like that wasn't that close, you know? But I do think that, you know, maybe this is a spot where you're saying like, all right, well, let's see. Maybe the Lakers can grab a game. Maybe they can grab two games. The line's bad. Like, I was looking at this. I was like, all right, maybe it's a little bit different. I think the Lakers are pretty healthy right now. It's early in the playoffs. It's probably when I would want to play, similar to the kind of what I was talking about with the Sixers and Joel Embiid playing Boston. Over 5.5 games is like -170. You can't bet it. It's unbettable. And then I have no interest in playing like the Lakers +2.5 games or something. Like, you're just getting bad numbers there. So I do think that the proper bet is probably Denver -1.5 games. They should win the series. I think they should be able to take care of business. It's just, you know, it's a really pretty rough rematch or first round matchup for the Lakers. You know, obviously there was conversation like, oh, should they tank like the 7-8 games? Like, no, you don't fucking lose that game. Like, you have to get in the playoffs. It's a math thing. But then now it's like, you know, you have a rough matchup against Denver. Granted, if you do beat Denver, then that changes the entire Western Conference picture, and you're in probably a pretty good part of the bracket. You know, you're playing Phoenix, you're playing Minnesota, you know, both obviously good teams, but both flawed teams that you can kind of try to take some advantage of. So I think that's definitely an interesting spot. But to me, I'd be looking for, you know, maybe I'm going to see what the number is between Jokic and AD for rebounds leader. Murray for scoring leader, I think, is particularly interesting. And for assists, I would definitely go with, I would look at Jokic number one, but I would definitely consider LeBron depending on what the line is. We just kind of have to see, and I'll try to update you. with that. Looking at the rest of the seeds, so we have like the one seeds are still outstanding. The Thunder are really the big winners right now. You know, you're getting a matchup against the, I think you could say the Thunder are winners. The Clippers and the Mavs are also kind of winners because the Kings beating the Warriors is great for them. You know, like the Warriors seem kind of cooked, but they do still have that. They obviously have that pedigree. Like nobody wants to give Curry an opportunity to get hot. But the thing is, the Pelicans could very well win this play-in game even without Zion. If they don't have Zion, who's dealing with this hamstring injury, they're drawn dead. They are just absolutely drawn dead. And I think that the fact that the Pelicans or the Kings are, you know, the first round matchup for the Thunder, you're really in a strong position there, given the fact that Zion has that type of injury. It shifts the nexus over like what you can do defensively. It dramatically changes what New Orleans can do offensively. I think that, you know, if they play the Kings, maybe they get Monk back, but they still are down a number of players. So I do have some concerns with the Kings offense overall and the team overall. I think they're a little bit thin. So, you know, they were obviously there last year. Thunder weren't really there. You know, you have a little bit more experience, but OKC has looked tremendous over the course of the season. I would be looking at OKC in that spot. For Boston, one of the plays that I wanted to take, and it's probably one of my favorite plays, right, is Tatum. His assist, his rebounds prop on MGM is over 8.1 rebounds per game in the playoffs, right? When you look at what Tatum has done over the course of the regular season, he's averaged 8.1 this year, 8.8 last year, 8.0 last year or the year before that in rebounds in the regular season. In the playoffs last year, he averaged 10.5 rebounds per game. I know that this team is a little bit different. You have Porzingis. However, Porzingis is not necessarily known for his rebounding proclivities, right? Boston's defense is excellent. I think that you're going to see a lot more opportunities for him to grab rebounds. I think that he's going to be needed at, like, from a rebounding perspective. So I really do like that. His assist total here is 4.9. That's what his assist average is, right? During the course of the regular season, we've seen that spike up pretty significantly in the playoffs. In the playoffs, we've seen him, you know, take on a little bit higher offensive load. So, and that's just what MGM did. They just put out their season long averages for these props. For Tatum in the playoffs over the past couple of seasons, he is at 5.3, 6.2 over the last 2 years in terms of his assists. Obviously, you add in Drew Holiday, Derek White's playing more minutes. Those things all kind of matter. But at the same time, I think that, you know, this is Tatum's time to shine. This is his opportunity, and he's going to be trying to seize that throughout this entire postseason. He's going to be trying to seize that, especially in these spots. Another spot to look at is, I think, and this has to do with the way that Boston kind of plays, right? So, like, I think their offense is so good. It's such a well-oiled machine. But do have, like, some slight concerns with, you know, when they do get into late-game offense, that it gets a little sticky, right? So Jaylen Brown is notorious for only having one hand to dribble with, right? In the playoffs, we see a pretty significant spike in his turnovers, 3.3 turnovers per game last year, 3.1 the year prior. During the regular season, he's never had a season above three. So I think it's because he's playing more minutes. The defense clamps down a little bit. They try to force you into some of the bad, like, type of decisions that you're able to, that you make. And it just makes it a little bit harder for you, right? And I think that that's why he kind of runs into that situation. Like I said, Drew Holiday's there, Derek White's there. At the same time, like, these guys, they live for this moment. You kind of revert back unintentionally, I think, sometimes into what you're, like, naturally wanting to do. And I think that that kind of is a look for Jaylen Brown as well. So those are two of the looks that I was looking at, you know, just for Boston generally. Is I'm betting the Tatum over rebounds. I'm also going to be betting on Tatum to lead a variety of different series in rebounds per game. Especially, I just need to see where we get matched up. I need to know if they're playing Miami. If they're playing Miami, it's a smash. It's Tatum for sure. If we're playing Philadelphia, it changes it, obviously, because you have a guy like Joel Embiid. I did want to talk about the New York Knicks, obviously, a little bit. It would be impossible not to. Brunson has been tremendous, 28.7 points per game during the regular season. Last year during the playoffs, he averaged 27.8 points per game. It's a little bit wonky to look at some of these numbers, just given the fact that, you know, Julius Randle was in and out. Brunson was hurt himself a bit. But what they did was they set Jalen Brunson's points per game here at 28.7, which I think is a little bit of a mistake. You're either playing the Miami Heat, who he has played pretty well against. And the other thing is that average is not encapsulating the fact that he's playing these games without Julius Randle. The problem for me is with this line is that he's played much better really against it's kind of been a mixed bag, right? He's only got one 30-point game in this series. And the other thing is both Philly and Miami play kind of slow. So you have to look at this in two ways. I think that if you're betting on this Brunson points prop, you're betting on the fact that they're going to make it to the next round, because the next round is against Milwaukee or Indiana, both teams that play dramatically faster than Philadelphia and Miami. So I think that when you're looking at this player prop, you're really saying like, is New York going to win the first round series? Then maybe you can bet it. So that's why I think that like, if you can make that jump, then yeah. But I think that the better way to bet this then would be to just bet them to win the first round series. It wouldn't even surprise me. I don't know. We don't have a line out yet. This series price is going to be short because Philadelphia has the pedigree. Like they have Joel Embiid and Miami has the pedigree. So I think the series price is going to be short. I'd rather bet on, if I was going to bet this, I'd rather bet on the Knicks to win the series, like in that type of way. I'd rather bet on Brunson to maybe be the scoring leader. Those are all different angles. I think that that's a better way to bet on Brunson's scoring than in this particular way on the points per game. I think that if they were to make it to the next round, it's a no-brainer. Like he's going to crush this number. It's not even going to be close. But you're betting on multiple things. So for me, I'd rather bet on one thing rather than multiple things. And that's one of the important things about who these teams could potentially play. What is the path? What is the circumstance? And that's kind of why, even though I like this prop for Brunson at 28.1, I would rather bet something else because I think that you're getting better value. That being said, I think for the assists, you might be able to find a little bit more value here. For Brunson, his assists per game average against these teams or where they're setting this at, they set it at 6.7. I think it's a little high. However, he's averaging 7.4 assists per game against the Heat and the Sixers. He's had 8+ in 5 of 7 games against them this season. And when we look at what Brunson has done over the course of the season, he's averaging 5.6 assists per game in the playoffs last year. And then this year in the regular season, he's averaging 6.7. So I have a little bit of concern. I think the matchup's good for it. But at the same time, I do have some concerns whether or not they're going to be using him in that type of facilitating role or if he's going to be used as more of a traditional and primary scoring option. There's been a lot here. I will talk about some more in my player props forecast that's coming out. I'm going to talk a little bit more about rotations. Certain guys play different minutes. The Knicks are just not going to sit anybody. Luka Doncic plays, like he sees a shift. He usually plays like the entire first quarter then. Things change a little bit in the NBA playoffs, and those are all things that I'm going to be analyzing for you and putting out there, and we're going to be able to target a lot more different markets, whether it's the series leader, first quarter bets, etc. But there usually is some soft opportunities and some soft opening lines for the NBA playoffs. So I've talked a lot For pods and recs, I'm just going to hit you with a quick one. Get a fire pit, build a fire pit, do whatever you got to do. It's nice to sit outside with a couple logs and kind of unwind. Just a nice opportunity there, and pour yourself like a nice little glass of bourbon. It always kind of warms you up. You know, if it's a little bit chilly outside right now, I think now is a great time to be sitting out by a fire. Not really getting all the bugs yet. It still hasn't hit that time of the year. And I think it's a pretty good opportunity, a way to unwind your day. But once again, this episode is brought to you by our good friends at props.cash. This is the number one and the premier player prop betting tool in the market. Like I said before, you can get the red charts, the green charts, you can get the playoff versus the regular season numbers. It is just absolutely crucial to being able to be used for you for player prop betting on a daily basis. You can get that for 25% off your first month with code DELERA25. So get props.cash, get your player props in, get your playoff betting in, and let's have an absolutely great time and continue to cash that.